Well, all year we've been talking about how God has called us to freedom. We've been stressing the idea that being released from sin means that not only are we not going to suffer the consequences of sin, the guilt of sin, but it means that God gives us a way of dealing with the world around us that doesn't rely on the tools that we used to rely on to deal with a broken world. God gives us a better way. And what a great blessing it is that God has given us this better way. So when we read this statement in Galatians 5, beginning at verse 1, "For freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore. Do not submit again to the yoke of slavery." It becomes important to us to understand that we have to work to maintain this freedom that we've been given. We've made the point that it's hard to learn to be a freed man. We spent so much time dealing with a broken world, using a broken world's tools, that we begin to think that's the way that we ought to do it. Well, that's not really the case. We've seen that over and over again. But you know, it's really important that we be ready to fight to maintain this freedom that God has given us. We've often heard it said that freedom is not free. Somebody had to fight to get it for us, and we have to fight to keep it. There's a lot of value to that. In Galatians, the third chapter, the second chapter, beginning at the third verse, we find the Apostle Paul ready to fight to maintain the kind of freedom that he knew that God had bestowed upon Christians. Galatians 2, beginning at verse 3, he says, "Not even Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. And that because of the false brethren privily brought in, who came in privily to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us unto bondage, to whom we gave place in the way of subjection, no, not for an hour, that the truth of the gospel might continue with you." The apostle was ready to fight not to be enslaved. But then I encounter something really odd. Look at the case of Timothy. Seems like we're dealing with the same outward appearance of something. In the case of Timothy, in Acts the 16th chapter, another young man who accompanied the Apostle Paul as he was preaching. He says he came to Derbe and to Lystra, and behold, there was a certain disciple there named Timothy, son of a Jewess that believed. His father was a Greek. Same was well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go with him, and he took and circumcised him because of the Jews that were in those parts. For they all knew his father was a Greek, and they went on their way through the cities. They delivered to them the decrees to keep, which had been ordained of the apostles and elders that were at Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith, and they were increased in number daily. Paul's ready to fight. He's not going to allow people to bring Titus into slavery from which he was escaped. But why then would he circumcise Timothy? Well, there's a simple fact. And the simple fact is circumcision doesn't make any difference in our relationship with God. In 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter, beginning at verse 18, he writes to the Corinthians and he says, "Was any man called being circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Have you been called an uncircumcision? Let him not be circumcised." Circumcision is nothing. Uncircumcision is nothing. What matters is keeping the commandments of God. Wow, this thing with circumcision, at least in my mind, gets blown up all out of proportion. This is a big deal, and I have a hard time sometimes understanding why circumcision was such a controversy in the first century. So let's try to understand something about circumcision, and we're going to continue this discussion of maintaining our freedom throughout the month of December. This is just the beginning point. This lays the groundwork, I hope, for our later discussions. You know, this whole thing with circumcision was not something that was new to the Jews. The Jews have been dealing with circumcision for a long, long time. The fact is that circumcision had been given to the Jews. It was a sign of the covenant that God had made with them. We're all familiar with that. And I had always assumed that throughout the rest of the world, circumcision was unknown. Nobody except the Jews were circumcised. That's not true. Circumcision was widely practiced. Some people did it for one reason. Some people did it for another reason. Maybe they did it for an aesthetic reason. Maybe they did it for a health reason. But there were a lot of people that were circumcised who weren't Jews. Now, sometimes people who were desiring to be proselytes or to join the Jews had already been circumcised. The Jews would have argued you can't become a Jew unless you're circumcised. Well, what do you do with somebody that's already circumcised? Well, you know what their response was? We can't circumcise you again, so we'll make a pinprick. And as long as that pinprick is sufficient to draw blood, then we'll say that you were circumcised when you became a Jew. That's kind of a foolish notion when you think about it for a little bit. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But that was their way of dealing with the circumcised who wanted to become proselytes. Now, it was easy to deal with people that were uncircumcised that wanted to become proselytes. And in fact, this idea of a second circumcision, this was not something that was universally practiced among the Jews. Some Jews argued that you didn't have to be circumcised if you were already circumcised. Some Jews argued that you needed to be circumcised if you were circumcised. The people that said you don't need to be circumcised pointed to their mothers and said, "Our mothers are not circumcised, and they're Jews." So there was this long controversy that dealt with those that wanted to be proselytes that had already been circumcised. How are you going to deal with that? Well, that wasn't the only problem they had. They also had to deal with a group of people that were called the God-fearers. And we've encountered that term in different places. When we read about Cornelius, the first Gentile convert, the description of him is that he was one who feared God. That's that term, God-fearer. They aligned themselves with the God of the Jews. They wanted to have an allegiance with Judaism. For the most part, they were uncircumcised. And because they were uncircumcised, turns out that they didn't have to pay the Jewish tax. You may not have ever heard of this Jewish tax. It's, if you're reading about it in the original language, it's called I've got to look at my notes here. It's called the Ficus Judaicus. So if you weren't circumcised, you didn't have to pay that tax. Where did that tax come from? Well, this tax was originally imposed by the Emperor Vespasian as a way to punish the Jews for the first Gentile revolt, or first Jewish revolt, excuse me. Now, that first Jewish revolt happened between 66 and 73. It's a revolt that we're familiar with. We've read about it in our history books. We know that they rebelled against against the Roman overlords. And interestingly, after the Romans had destroyed the Jewish temple in the year 70, they said, now that tax that you had been paying to support your temple, we're going to require you to pay this special tax to support our temple to Jupiter in the city of Rome. It was the same amount, 2 denarii, but now it's being used to support this pagan worship that was taking place in Rome. That was particularly galling to the Jews. They hated paying this temple tax. And on top of that, now the God-fearers, who wanted to have something to do with the Jews, but had been uncircumcised, didn't have to pay that tax. Now, this is the way Josephus describes that tax and the real insult that this was to the Jews. Josephus says, besides other taxes that on the Jews was levied with the utmost rigor, and those who persecuted who, without publicly acknowledging that faith, yet lived as Jews. Remember, there were a lot of people that lived like Jews. They wanted to have a relationship with the Jewish God, the God of the Jews, who is the real God. They understood that, and they wanted to have a relationship with him, but they weren't circumcised. They lived as Jews, as well as those who concealed their origin and did not pay the tribute levied upon their people. And then he opines this. They may have been Christians whom the Romans commonly assumed were Jews. And then look at the insult that he describes. I recall being present in my youth when the person of a man 90 years old was examined before the procurator, that's a Jewish official, or a Roman official, excuse me, and a very crowded court to see whether he was circumcised so they would know whether they had to collect the tax. This is a big deal in the Jewish mind. And it reminds me of something. Generally speaking, when we think about those things that become ways that we're enslaved, there's a lot to it that's kind of underneath the surface. And you don't really know the whole story when somebody says to you, this is what you have to do. Just like, I never realized there was this Jewish tax. I never realized that they had to deal with proselyte circumcision. All this was underneath the surface. So when you try to deal with things that can enslave us, you have to understand there's a lot that goes into this. Now we're going to talk about the ways that this plays out today. We don't generally have a problem with circumcision. But you remember as we started talking about restoration history and we started talking about the First Great Awakening in our country, one of the things that they insisted was necessary if you were going to be a part of what they called the visible church was a church covenant. Baptism wasn't enough for you to be associated with this church. You had to present your conversion narrative, and the church had to vote on your conversion narrative to see whether, in fact, you had been converted. And beyond that, you had to sign the church covenant. There's a lot that happened behind the scenes that produced that. But it's the same thing that was going on with the insistence on circumcision. A little bit later in our country, there were some travelers that were moving to California, a wagon train that was going through just the southern tip of Utah. And you can ask Ron about this. He knows a lot more about it than I do. But they killed everybody that was in the wagon train. Well, they saved some of the women and some of the little girls. But all of the males were killed. They were passing through Mormon country. When the Mormons found out about it, they took the leaders of the group that had killed that wagon train. And they said, you must shed your own blood to make up for what you did. The blood that Jesus shed, that's not enough. You have to shed your own blood. It's called the doctrine of blood atonement, if you're interested. Now we'll talk about how that's just like circumcision. Just like church covenants were like circumcision. And we're not going to let that happen. We're going to stand free people. And no one is going to take us back to bondage. We're going to maintain the freedom that we have in Christ against all who would try to again enslave us. And there are false brethren brought in unawares whose sole purpose is to spy out our liberty. We can't let that happen. The Apostle Paul eventually will say, you who are circumcised, you've given up God. You've given up Christ. So we're going to talk about maintaining our freedom, and it's critical. Let's back up a little bit. If you don't know about this freedom, and you want to be free from the bondage that's all around you in the world, and Ralph showed us this morning, the whole world lies in wickedness. They lie under the sway of the wicked one. If you want to be released from that, we want to help you put on Jesus. That's the only thing that will release you from that bondage. You put him on in baptism. We'll help you to do that. Anytime. Now, later this week, in the middle of the night, it doesn't matter when you want to put on Jesus in baptism. We will help you. Because it's that important that you come to know freedom. And then we'll stand with you so that you can maintain that freedom. You're going to have to give yourself to God completely. He doesn't ask a lot. He just asks everything that you have. And we want to help in any way that we can.